From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Radio Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we are glad to welcome in Moises Roberto de Leon, who is the Associate Director of Family and Respect Life Ministry here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Moises, always great to hear your voice.
No, thank you, Bob, for having me on.
Appreciate you taking the time in your busy day. Which hat are you wearing today?
Yeah, I'm wearing the Family Life Ministry hat on.
Very, very, very good. I know that there's no such thing as downtime when you're trying to spread the good word.
No, it's busy all around. There's always going to be months that it's a little bit more busy just because of months that we have dedication to either pro-life month or a season or family month. Or I know in the summer we have an NFP awareness week. So there's specific dates in the year that it's a little bit more focused, but we're constantly working in ministry.
So there is a lot happening, though.
Yes.
Tell us what you're working on right now.
So right now, we're partnering up with an organization called R3 Academy. And what they do is they have state funds that have been pre-approved. They've worked in the past with the diocese as well. But their primary focus is to enhance the community and our families by providing workshops for fathers and couples. We have a guy who's here locally. He's a regional director. His name is Edison Martinez. He's been doing this for quite some time now. And what his primary focus was trying to get the fathers involved more in the family by enhancing their communication skills, their understanding of how to understand and talk to their children, be able to listen to them, being able to provide them with tools in order for them to have a toolkit as they become parents or as they are already parents, but in order for them to enhance that role within their parents. And as a father, especially for fathers, they have a huge role in helping develop character in their children. So the emphasis on equipping the father in the family is something that we're working really hard on, and his organization does it really well. He's providing workshops, both English and Spanish, and all he's asking is if anyone else wants to have these workshops in their parishes, to have an open door. Usually his workshops are roughly around 10 to 12 weeks, there's 12 sessions, and he's really likes to have a small group of between 15 to 20, either men or couple, who are willing to commit to those 12 weeks in order to get the best out of it.
Wow. So how is the church connected to this group, to R3?
Well, within the Respect Life family, we see how parents play a huge role in the development of the child, not only in the spiritual sense, but also in the psychological, physical, and mental disabilities ability as well. So this is where we partnered up and understanding that role is essential, and we need to really promote that within our parents, especially right now in our society where we have a huge focus of helping the mom, and I know the U.S. bishops have been supporting the Moms in Need initiative as well. We're trying to focus on the other side of that perspective by engaging the parents and the fathers as the primary person in the family that can make a huge difference to us well, and giving his part an important role in the family, providing that space for him.
Wow. So is it primarily for fathers or is it for couples?
It's both. It's both. So he offers... Right now, his primary focus is fathers, but if the parish is open to do it for couples too, he's willing to do that as well.
Very good. Very good. How can people sign up for this?
They could contact me, or they can contact him directly. Right now, he's trying to work up his way up to Yuba City. Right now, he's already had set up some workshops starting in the summer in St. Joseph's here in Sacramento. I think he's got an approval for starting another workshop in the summer in Woodland. So it's contacting him directly in order for him to, whenever he has these conversations with the pastors, he's able to bring that to the table and say that there's already interest in his community. That really helps us get something going in those parishes that we have already support from the community to begin with. So they're willing to contact him. They can just call me, either my office or email me at my office email as well.
Very good. Why don't you give that number?
Yes. So it's 916-733-0133. And my email is Ed, N for Moises, and then my last name, Deleon, D-E-L-E-O-N, at SCB, SS in Sacramento, CS in Catholic, CS in Diocese.org.
As I understand it, there's a grant that's paying there, so that there's no charge?
There is no charge for these workshops.
Boy, that's great.
So the only thing that he's asking is the commitment for a couple or for a father to do it for all 12 sessions.
Yeah, and so we're talking about probably into September or so.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't want to. It sounds like a great program.
No, it is, Bob. It is.
Very good. So, Moises, what else are you working on this as we head almost to summer?
There's not much happening in summer. We were going to plan for a Respect Lives Outreach election with our partners up in Holy Spirit and St. Mary's in Vacaville. There was a delay there, so we're trying to find a parish with a new location to hold that event. We're hoping St. Joseph's willing to have us, but we're trying to, if it's not this summer, we might push it into the fall. But we're trying to have a Respect Life Recollection. It's going to be a half-day spiritual retreat just to really help our Respect Life members engage their spirituality. Many times we're focused on doing the service and helping our moms in need or trying to be out there praying at the clinics. And we're trying to focus a little bit more on our prayer side too as well. So we're organizing that. I'm still need to look at location and dates. It was originally planned for June 3rd and the 10th, but we're still working on those.
Yeah, it's, you know, there are so many people out there in the vineyard working hard, and sometimes we forget that they really do need our support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
I have one more event, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's June 17th. We're trying to get another training for our facilitators who help in marriage prep. We're trying to invite the Engage and Enrich inventory in order for new deacons or deacons and wives or a couple who's interested in helping a marriage prep. We're still in a great need for facilitators for the premarital inventory that we do here in the diocese. So we're hosting that in June 17. It's virtual. Everything's going to be done online. I think it's a 7-hour training, so it would be the whole day, and at the end of the day, you would get certified, you would get all the tools, and it would be a constant support from our local regional person who's in charge that can assist them along the way as well. So it's not a one-time thing. We're trying to build that relationship and network within our diocese.
So is there a shortage of people to do marriage prep?
Yes, there is. I think because of the pandemic, a lot of the older folks have retired. A good portion of them moved out of state. And I know some parishes closed down their services and their ministry temporarily and pushed people to go online. And they're trying to get that back started in their home parishes. So one of the things that I've seen, and many pastors have called, say that they really want to start that ministry again, but they don't have anyone to do it anymore. They're trying to start over from scratch. So one of the great needs that we need is not only the marriage prep aspect, but the having facilitators to facilitate the pre-inventory assessment. It takes time. It's a little bit more training and being able to be comfortable with the couples. Because some of the conversations that might come up might be a little bit intense between them. Right. So we really need people who are able to navigate those conversations and navigate those emotions and be able to provide the love and compassion that couples need sometimes during that year or month as they're getting ready for the sacrament of marriage.
That sounds like a tough job, you know, and good for the people who are willing to take it on, because you will probably get some difficult questions or maybe even some challenges, you know, and I guess that's the way it is nowadays, but it's such a valuable tool to have for couples.
Oh yes, and it helps a couple understand if they're compatible to start with. Sometimes I've heard stories that through the inventory they're able to engage conversations they never had engaged even in their dating years or time as they were getting to know each other, and even in their engagement process they never really addressed certain issues either of money or kids or anything else. How to make decisions together, and the inventory itself allows the couples to really come in and be engaging with those tough topics or topics that they try to push away, because it gets controversial or it could bring up tension between them. But it's something that they actually are forced to be placed in that situation in order to be able to come to marriage really open. And willing to accept their spouse as they are.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've never done been instructing marriage prep, but I've certainly talked to people who are about to get married, or you know, we all have friends that are in various situations, and you hear these stories where they say, well, we never talked about whether or not we wanted to have kids. I assumed he did, and he assumed I didn't, you know, and you're going, wow, that's kind of a big one. You know, that's kind of a big one. Or I always assumed we were going to move back east to be near my family, and he doesn't want to move from wherever, you know, or vice versa. And it is amazing. Like you say, or maybe it's a marriage where one spouse is Catholic and another spouse is of another faith or no faith, and I thought we'd just wait till the kids were 18 and let them decide, kind of thing. You know, and I'm sure you hear that a lot too. And to me, those are such basic. I guess they're basic things about getting to know somebody. You know, I remember the first. That's kind of a funny story, but the first day I met my wife, we were just talking about everything, you know, who we were and what our hopes and dreams were and everything, and she said, I said I always wanted to have six kids, and she looked at me and she said, you should have married me, you know, and then I knew we were on the same page, you know, and. You just those are kinds of things that I may seem elementary to a lot of couples, but a lot of people, I know there are times during courtship where you're so starstruck that you don't realize that things can be a bit different on a day-to-day basis, and there are questions that are going to come up in a marriage that will require discussion and compassion and understanding and maybe giving a little bit or compromising a little bit or whatever it is that two good people can have different ideas about something. And it's not necessarily a moral call. It's just one likes, you know, Rocky Road ice cream, and the other one likes peppermint, you know, and you're like, oh, you know, which brand are we going to buy tonight, you know? So, yeah, I think marriage prep is invaluable. How does marriage prep work? I mean, how do people get into marriage prep in the first place?
So one of the requirements that we ask is couples to be practicing Catholics, and for them to be able to, we're hoping for them to be at least married for at least 5 years. It could be less depending on how strong they're involved in the parish life. And usually father would determine that evaluation of if they're ready, they can handle it. Usually how they start is usually by helping either give one or two talks. But if the father feels they're ready to become facilitators, to become coordinators, it's up to each case's discretion on that. But what we primarily just ask in general is practicing Catholics, have a little bit of knowledge of what the sacrament of marriage is. If not, we usually have trainings and videos in order for that to be a process for them to be certified through our medical foundations. We're working on a specialization this summer in order for anyone who wants to become a marriage prep coordinator or team member to get that certification. So we're hoping by the end of August or 1st of September, we're officially done with everything. We're still trying to finalize some of the trainings that we have, but it's having them be certified through our Catechol Foundation. It's the first step. Second step would be if they're willing to do a little bit more, become facilitators. That really helps when it's the same couple that's going through the the marriage prep formation to be the facilitator. Just because they've already built that rapport, they know the person, it becomes easier. And then for them, if they do or if they don't, we would suggest, or we just recommend, not everyone does it, is for them to be a little bit knowledgeable of what natural family planning is. And if they don't, our training videos will be covering that as well. All the methods that we have, all the facilitators, and instructors that we have here locally and all the different methods in order for them to give a glimpse of it. If not, inviting the MFP instructor into the marriage prep as well. It's always great to have our MFP instructors be more involved in the parishes and for them to be able to engage couples who are interested in following up with MFP. Because our diocesan requirements is just 1 hour of introductory course to an MFP course. Which sometimes it's not enough to fully understand what the method is or how it works. So that's one of the things that we try to push is if the couple's really interested, have their NFP instructor on speed dial or have them be part of the marriage prep formation as well, just because it becomes super crucial for that couple to get that help and assistance right away rather than them waiting later on.
So NFP, at least an introduction to the basics of it, is part of marriage prep, not just for the facilitator, but for the people that are taking marriage prep.
Yes, it's one of the requirements. So one of the things that our marriage policy has is we have marriage prep, which includes all the theology of the sacrament of marriage, what's the responsibilities of them as a couple coming into the marriage, and understanding how married life will be. And then the second part is having the natural family plan introductory course done. And the last is the marital course to be done as well. So we require diocese, or if anyone's going to be marrying outside of the diocese, we're still required to do all three in order for that to be approved within the tribunal.
Very good. Moises, always a joy to talk with you. Thanks for all you do, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Okay, no, thank you, Bob.
Thanks so much, Moises. God bless. That's Moises De Leon, who is the Associate Director for Family and Respect Life Ministry here in the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Deacon Kevin Stasko, the Director of the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and Family and Faith Formation, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Deacon Kevin, for all you do, and thank you for that great introduction. Speaking of deacons, we are pleased and honored to welcome in Deacon Eric Patrick, one of our seminaries. Deacon, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing very, very good. I'm sitting here looking at your picture, looking at a story about you, and 10 a.m., the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament in Sacramento, June the 3rd. Guess what's happening?
Yeah, my ordination.
Yes.
I mean,
did you think you'd ever hear those words?
That it was some time.
Yeah. Wow. That's just fantastic.
Yes.
Describe your feelings if you can.
So I just finished, just graduated. So coming off of that, exhausted, but really hopeful and looking forward to this ordination. It's still, I think, sinking in. it's like, is it really happening? I'm excited, but I think it's still a little bit down there. Wow. Hasn't fully sunk in yet.
So are you going to be known as Father Eric or Father Patrick?
I'm guessing Father Patrick, since we already have for Father Eric's in the diocese.
We do, yes, indeed. Indeed. You say you're just graduated. Explain what you mean.
Yeah, so I just, last week we finished, I finished at St. Patrick's Seminary, graduated with my MDiv and SDB, and I need to finish up an MA thesis paper to receive my MA. After 7 years in formation, a year of pre-theology, philosophy, that is, and 4 years of theology and a couple of pastoral years. Now I'm all done with formation in the seminary.
Wow. That's a lot of years.
Yes.
You are...
Not the most, though.
Yeah, you haven't reached retirement age, have you?
Our diocese will tell you, it's like, I've been with information for 14 years, 15 years. It's like, wow.
Wow.
A lot, but not the most.
Wow. So take us back. Tell us about your upbringing, where you grew up, and that, and your first kind of introduction to the faith.
Yeah, so I was raised cradle Catholic. I'd say we were kind of pew Catholics. We go to Mass on Sunday and confession a couple times a year, say grace, but not a ton more. I mean, we working parents.
Were you in the Sacramento area?
So I was raised outside of Redding, California.
Oh, okay.
In a small town, Whitmore.
Whitmore, that's a real small town.
Yeah, that's why I always say outside of Redding,
yes.
Because most people don't know it. We grew up 20 acres out in the country, and so there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity to do more than really go to Mass.
Did you have a mission church in Whitmore?
There's a mission church in Shingletown.
Oh, in Shingletown, okay.
The road to it is a single-lane cow pasture road,
yeah.
And so rather than hazard that road regularly, we went to Our Lady of Mercy.
In Redding?
Yes.
Yeah. So Redding was the big city?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the anchor of the North State, I guess.
Yeah, you have people come there to do shopping and stuff all the way from Missouri sometimes.
Oh, they do from Ashland and Medford and every place else. Because, wow, that's amazing. So then what happened? You caught fire, obviously.
Yeah, so I was homeschooled up until I went to college, while I was learning how to drive, and so I had to need a certain number of required hours, and one of them was night driving. My mom let me drive to the youth group. And so I started actually encountering other Catholics my age that were excited about the faith. And around that time, I was also going through this kind of conversion. It's like, well, why Catholicism? This is something I've been raised in, but I need to go past that and start making it my own.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent several years leading up to that, trying to understand the faith and also taking an honest look at is the Catholic faith the faith that I really believe, and not just accept what I've been given.
Right.
Really make it my own.
I think a lot of us who are cradle Catholics kind of go through that experience.
Yeah, and I think we have to, because when it's always just somebody telling you this is it, you don't take any ownership of that.
Right.
You don't go deeper into it, and so that's why we have to undergo that point where it's like, okay, take an honest evaluation, and either the minimum is enough, or we need to go further.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was what kind of started my vocation journey.
So where'd you go to college?
I went to Thomas Aquinas College.
Oh, yes.
In Santa Paula.
Yeah, that's one of the most beautiful campuses around, isn't it? It's small, but it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
Initially, I went to community college, but I quickly got turned off by the secularism and lack of any kind of religion
in
the classes that I was attending.
Right.
Even sometimes hostility to religion. And so all around that time, I started discerning whether I was called to religious life or priesthood. Early on, I was kind of focused on religious life because of the mentality is like, I'm not worthy to be a priest.
Yeah.
And I think almost every seminarian goes through that, and we're not worthy. That's the thing, is realizing that it's God's mercy that calls us to it, not anything that we're doing. And so God kept kind of shutting doors, and then he showed me Thomas Aquinas College, and I fell in love with it, and went there, got my degree in liberal arts. All that time, one of the nice things about Thomas Aquinas College is we would have regular vocation talks.
Oh, really?
Of different orders, diocesan, religious, you name it.
Who runs Thomas Aquinas College?
It's a lay Catholic organization.
Okay.
So the founders back in 69 basically decided to try to build a good Catholic college,
mm-hmm.
Because what they were seeing in so-called Catholic colleges wasn't really Catholic. So, yeah, it's lay. It's not a religious order.
Right, right.
But they did a really good job of making sure that we had all the opportunities to look at what we would be doing after college. And a large part of that was vocations talks from all different orders, and that chance to talk with them and engage in that process of discernment. If we were called to a religious life, to priesthood, or in marriage as well. And so while I was at Thomas Aquinas College, I started going to Mass every day. We have four Masses on campus, and I started putting parts of the Liturgy of the Hours. I had a spiritual director who knew I was discerning whether religious life or priesthood, and he encouraged me to start putting, not all of it,
mm-hmm.
but we started doing the evening Liturgy of the Hours with a small group of us who were discerning that vocation. And so that kept me really actively discerning throughout college. And when I graduated, I was still a little bit hesitant. And so I had been doing a lot more research, and I knew I'd have to pay off my student loans before mm-hmm. I went on. So I kind of made this deal with God. It's like, okay, God, I'm going to pay off my student loans, and then I'll come back to this idea. in the meantime, I got really involved with my parish, and I started by helping out ushering. I became a Knights of Columbus.
And this is back in Reading?
Back in Reading, mm-hmm. Our Lady of Mercy, yeah.
Yeah.
So ushering Knights of Columbus, I took over as the coordinator for the altar servers. The pastor had been organizing the parish library. I started teaching children's faith formation. And the parochial vicar, Father Guillermo Ramirez, mm-hmm. Agreed to be my spiritual director during that time. And we were talking one day, and I was coming to the realization, it's like, yeah, I work 5 days a week, and I'm really looking forward to the weekend because I get to be in the parish.
Oh, wow. That's a good sign.
That's a good sign, yeah. But I was still hesitant, and so he finally gave me the push to go talk to the diocese. Because I was like, oh, I don't think I'm worthy, Father. It was like, look how bad of a person I am. He told me, he was like, well, go apply to the diocese and see what they say.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing I know, I'm in seminary.
Wow.
Everything went pretty really smooth and... Yeah, fan-fast, and so, yeah. So
did you pay off the student loans?
Yes, I paid off the student loans. I took a little bit longer. When I was having that conversation with them, I was like, I was done paying off the student loans, and I was like, well, that was my kind of my last hold. So I never didn't have that as an excuse anymore.
So you already had a lot of really excellent training from St. Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah.
Do you know what percent of people who graduate from there go on into religious life?
The last numbers I heard that I haven't updated in a while was 14% mm-hmm. of the graduates.
A very high percentage.
Yeah.
Wow. So who was the vocations director at the time?
Father Jovito Huerta.
Yes.
Who coincidentally had been the parochial vicar at Our Lady of Mercy while I was in college. So I met him a couple of times while I was home visiting.
Right. And he didn't try to talk you out of it.
Nope. Like, he was like, here's the paperwork. Let's work on this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you had, I mean, I'm sure there are a number of people who one day get struck by lightning and say, I want to be a priest. And they have done no work in the parish. They've done, you were really laying the groundwork, and you weren't doing it to prove anything. You were doing it because that felt right to you. But it certainly would indicate that you might be a good candidate.
Yeah. And at the time, I didn't really see it that way, but in retrospect, yes.
Well, and that's the good part about it, is you did not see it that way, you know, that you enjoyed it, and it felt like a calling to you. Like you say, you were working 5 days a week, and you couldn't wait for the weekend so you could be in the parish.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's outstanding. So, okay, so at some point, the bishop has to approve, right?
Yes. I didn't have an individual meeting with him at that early stage in the process that I recall. I think the way our diocese usually does it is the vocations director and the different people that interview us in the entering process give him their evaluation, and he trusts the people he's called to serve in that capacity.
Yeah, I mean, bishops have enough to do without, you know, exactly, doing all the discerning by themselves. Yeah, that's why they have vocation directors and committees and et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the final steps to ordination, I write Bishop a petition to orders, and that he then responds to with the yes or no. Usually by that point, the seminary has done a full evaluation, and unless it's something the seminary doesn't know about, it's almost always a yes.
So how long was it from the time you sort of filled out the paperwork with Father Rata to you were having an assignment to go to seminary?
So I began in, I want to say September, and I knew I was accepted by the diocese anyway. I still had to some interviews with the seminary up until the following summer. Mm-hmm. But I knew I was going to be accepted by the diocese in, I think, January.
Mm-hmm.
So basically then I had those 6 months until 7 months until August.
Right.
From that point, while doing interviews with the seminary, I think they finally gave their go-ahead at the beginning of summer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it took about a little bit less than a year, but that was because I applied basically at the beginning of the academic year.
So what were the toughest questions or the toughest questions you asked yourself during the discernment process or that others were asking you?
Toughest questions.
I guess this was the toughest question.
This is the toughest one. I mean, not so much a specific question, but just getting to that self-knowledge that you can give a clear clear response to that, am I being called?
Right.
I mean, because we can have people outside and we can have God pointing us, but we need to come to know ourselves as we're coming to know God as well, so that we can really be com- completely open with God and surrendering to Him.
Right.
So, I mean, that's maybe not always phrased as a question, but that is, I think, probably the most challenging question
right.
that any of us face is, can you actually surrender to me,
mm-hmm.
Coming from God? And I don't know that anybody outside of Our Lady completely is able to do that complete surrender.
Right.
But it's coming to that point where we can surrender more and more and depend upon God more and more completely. That I think is the most challenging part of the priestly vocation, but really it's every vocation as well.
Sure. So were there other things you could imagine yourself doing other than being a priest?
Sure. I've got quite a few talents. Mm-hmm. God's blessed me with very practical mindsets, and there's very few things I can't figure out how to do, which it always just reminds me how much I need to be thankful for all the gifts God has given me.
Sure.
So I could imagine being able to do other things, but I don't think I could feel happy doing all those kind of things.
You didn't see like a career path like, gee, I could have been playing Major League Baseball, but, or I could have been whatever. I could have been a great inventor. But I chose the priesthood, but I was wavering back and forth. You didn't really face that kind of a dilemma.
No. Yeah, I didn't face that kind of dilemma.
Yeah, you've got me convinced. So then you go, is St. Patrick's the automatic? How does that work? You already had a bachelor's.
Well, yeah, so if... For a seminarian to come in straight out of high school, they need a college degree.
Right.
And when the diocese accepts them and doesn't encourage them, they need a little bit more time, so maybe go get a college degree themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Marcus, he came in straight out of high school, so he needed a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
The fault then is generally all... Mount Angel up in Oregon.
Right.
But if you come in with a college degree, then you'd have to ask Bishop the exact process for determining that.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes he'll send us to St. Pat's and sometimes to Mount Angel.
Okay. Did you ever spend any time at Mount Angel?
No, it's on my bucket list.
Somebody said they have a great Oktoberfest up there.
Well, I'll have to think about that.
So, a beautiful part of the world, that's for sure. For those that don't know, Mount Angel is just a little bit off of I-5, kind of up near Salem, maybe 50, 60, 70 miles south of Portland, and just in beautiful, beautiful country. So, you go to St. Patrick's in Menlo Park, and... What's laid out in front of you as you begin at St. Patrick's?
What do you mean laid out?
Well, I mean how many years and what sort of coursework and other things do you do as you're at St. Patrick's?
So generally, if you come in with a college degree, you do 2 years of pre-theology. That's primarily philosophy, and mm-hmm. it's there to give us a foundation, and so we're able to reason and then build on that philosophy in 4 years of theology.
Mm-hmm.
In our diocese, we also have a pastoral year, so what's in front of us then is we go in, we do 2 years of philosophy. We're back in the diocese during the summers.
Right.
Then we transition to theology. We do 2 more years of theology, followed by then a pastoral year in which we are in a parish in the diocese for basically the full year, and we're doing what we can. We're not clergy yet, but that really gives us a chance to integrate into a pastoral parish life and work on pastoral experiences. And then we go back to the seminary for another 2 years of theology, after which graduation.
So you're talking about, what, 7 years with you, if you have a college degree?
If you have a college degree, yes.
Right. Right. Did that seem daunting at the start, or did that seem something you're going, wow, I get to be in this great learning environment and learn all about theology and philosophy, et cetera, for 7 years?
That long at once, it felt a little bit daunting. But I do enjoy studying. So it wasn't so much the coursework so long, so much as doing that consistently for 7 years, which felt a little bit daunting.
Well, you know, people go off to college, and if they go all the way and get a PhD or an MD or a law degree or vet school or professional degree, PhD, they're looking at 7 or 8 years or more.
Yes.
And you're all that wrapped into one. You're the whole ball game. You know, your goal is to get people to heaven.
Yeah.
Wow. So what's it like at St. Patrick's? What's it like in seminary?
Well, St. Patrick's down in Menlo Park. When I drove down there, I was like, what am I getting myself into? I'm a country boy, and I'm right here in the middle of a big city.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, as I drive in, it's about 40 acres.
Mm-hmm.
It's this somewhat secluded campus behind kind of a wall of trees all around it.
Right.
In the middle of the city.
Right. A little bit like Christ the King?
Yes, yes, a lot like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that initial surprise, like, oh, I'm not going to be stuck in the stuck next to a road for 7 years.
Yeah, yeah.
we had orientation, and we got to start a sense of what community life would be, where we begin the day with the morning office, and then we'll have a couple of classes. We'll have midday mass, and then lunch, followed by either free time or some more classes. And then in the evening, we have evening prayer in the community again. And that's kind of the flow of daily life. Weekends, we would go out into parishes or fielded assignments on either Saturday or Sunday. And the other day, we would have for studies, papers, and such.
Mm-hmm. So a rigorous curriculum, but something that was enjoyable for you.
Yes, yeah. It's like going to college, only we have a whole bunch of additional prayer as well.
Yeah, right. So, I've heard it's just a beautiful campus and a really a nice area of the world where everybody else is. There's a lot of expensive housing in that area too, isn't there? So, do they test your basketball skills when you're in seminary?
When you're foolish enough to say yes to the priest and seminary basketball game, yes.
I remember it used to be priests against the seminarians, and now they just kind of mix them all.
We don't have enough seminarians anymore.
Right, I know.
And even like my first year, it was like, not all the seminarians played, but we had, I think, 11 seminarians, and we had, like, 40-something priests.
Right.
And so it was like, we had almost no breaks. The priests were constant rotational breaks.
Oh, they were. I know. And the seminarians were getting gassed.
Yeah. So I think, and I think it's, I, personally, I think it's better this way to mix it up. It's just, it's a fun game.
Right.
We're not there to put on the best basketball game ever. We're there to get together, enjoy community, show people that, yes, priests and seminarians do things other than study and say mass.
Yeah.
and just have a good time.
Yeah. You know, now that the Kings have lost, you're the only game in town. So I should remind people the annual Priest Seminarians basketball game will take place on Tuesday, June the 20th, so just around the corner next month. It's always at Christian Brothers High School. Game time is 7 p.m., but the doors open at 6 p.m., and it's always just packed. And it, you can tell a certain priests or seminarians have a following more than family, you know, maybe the parish.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hysterical. It's really, and then it ends with, usually the bishop is there, sometimes both Bishop Soto and Bishop Wiegand are there, and all the seminarians and all the priests, and they link arms and they sing Salve Regina, and there's not a dry eye in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful moment. I highly recommend anybody who has not been to that basketball game to take it in. It's a lot of fun. There's concessions there. You can have dinner there. You can have a hot dog or nachos or something. It's just a real, real fun evening. And some of these priests and seminarians are pretty darn good ball players.
Yeah. So come to your local pastor or seminarian on.
Right.
All having a good time.
And then, of course, while we're on it, the annual vocations dinner is that Saturday, the 24th of June, and that's going to be at St. Paul's Parish on Florin Road in Sacramento. They move that around every year. They've had it up in Placerville and down in Vacaville and Roseville and West Sacramento. They've had it all over. And this year, St. Paul's, the beautiful parish on Florin Road in Sacramento. You can call George Bagley to get a ticket for that, 707-372-4913. So in the summers, you would come back every summer?
Yeah, with one exception. When we are sent down to Mexico for Spanish immersion.
Right.
Every other summer, we're back in the diocese either doing being at a parish, helping at Catholic Charities, one of the different organizations in the diocese, or we also do CPE, that's Clinical Pastoral Education, chaplaincy in the hospital.
Yes. So when you get sent to Mexico for Spanish immersion, Is it a foreign language school, or is it just that the fact that you're in Mexico and you're forced to speak the language?
Well, I think being in Mexico and forced to speak the language is a little bit better than the other part.
I think you're right.
The whole program starts where we are in Seminario Hispano in Mexico City, and we are attending classes at the local college. For Spanish.
Right.
And then at the end of it, we spend 3 to 5 weeks in a parish.
Uh-huh.
And that's when we really get tested.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have anybody around who speaks English. We're no longer with the different seminarians that we were studying Spanish with.
Right.
So we can only speak Spanish.
Right.
There's no talking English over lunch.
Yes.
It's like, nope, you're in it. You have to do it.
And there's no ordering lunch in English.
Yeah.
That might be a pretty good diet for some people.
Yeah, and some of us can use it.
Yeah. So are there other seminarians there in Mexico City with you? From other dioceses?
Yeah, we had quite a representation. I think we had 17 seminarians, a lot of them from the East Coast, actually.
Uh-huh.
We also Boston, others. We also had the Archdiocese of San Francisco there. And when I went, we there were three of us from Diocese of Sacramento, myself, Father Eric Pereira, and Father Ryan Mahar.
Right. So that's not a requirement of St. Patrick's. That's a requirement of the Diocese of Sacramento that you go to.
Yeah, precisely, yeah. We live in a diocese that most of the parishes we need to be bilingual.
Almost. There may be one or two that don't have a Spanish language mass, or two or three, but I'm not aware of them. Maybe some of the little mission churches don't, but for the most part, it's everywhere, which is wonderful.
And
I know it's probably not a requirement, but we have mass in I think six or seven languages here in the diocese, something like that. So
I'd have to think to count them all, but we do have quite a few.
Yeah, I think I read the Archdiocese of Los Angeles has mass in like 38 languages, something like that. It's phenomenal.
Wow.
just phenomenal. So we've only got a couple minutes, but family, are you going to have a cathedral doesn't have a cheering section. That will save that for the basketball game. But you're going to have family and friends and et cetera on June the 3rd at the cathedral?
Yeah, I think most of my immediate family is going to be able to be there. And I know I'll have quite a few friends, especially people who have supported us seminarians throughout this time, and we've come to develop friendships with those people who have been praying for us throughout all these years of formation. So I'm looking forward to seeing all those people join us for
And then when do you celebrate your first Mass?
The next day.
The next day.
I'll be, driving up to Our Lady of Mercy in Reading and celebrating my Mass of Thanksgiving at 11.
At your home parish?
Yeah, my home parish, Our Lady of Mercy.
Wow. And where will you be after that?
Doing a few more Masses of Thanksgiving. I'm going to go back to my pastoral parish, St. Charles Borromeo,
okay,
and celebrate a Mass the following weekend at 10:30 on the following Sunday. And then on July 1st, going to wherever bishop is assigning me.
So that assignment hasn't happened yet.
That assignment hasn't happened. Well,
it'll happen before July.
I'm sure the bishop knows, but he hasn't told me yet.
Right. He announces. I mean, the assignment actually begins on July 1, right?
Yeah.
Boy, what a task that must be for a bishop to, with over 100 parishes and trying to figure out who fits where and you know what will be best for the parish and what will also be a good fit for the priest and wow.
It's
quite a chore, but
that's why he has a personnel board to help him determine that as well.
Well, Deacon Eric Patrick, we're just thrilled for you. Thanks for all you do, all you've done, and all we know that you're going to do in this great Diocese of Sacramento. And you're an inspiration to all of us.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody who's listening, for your prayers.
We sure will.
Please keep praying for vocations and pray for the other seminarians as they continue to discern their vocation.
Very well said. We most definitely will. God bless, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much.
God bless you, too.
Thanks so much. That's Deacon Eric Patrick, soon to be Father Eric Patrick, on June the 3rd. A 10 a.m. Mass at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament in downtown Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
We stand and lift up our hands for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship him now. How
crazy.